talk about sports in Nashville. Presented by Franklin American Mortgage Company. It's Michaels and Mueller on 104.5 The Zone.
The Titans are out. The Preds are in. Always something happening in Nashville. Welcome to Michaels and Mueller on a Wednesday night. Ned Michaels here with you. Unfortunately, neither Bob nor Chris will be in with us tonight for a variety of reasons. Of course, Bob, always the Hall of Famer. He has been called to action. He's hosting every one of Channel 2's news broadcasts today as we get set for President-elect Biden's inauguration and everything happening at the Capitol. So he is on all points, is Bob Mueller. And sad news to report from Chris Sanders and his family. His father passed away, and he is not with us for obvious reasons. Chris, I'm sure you're listening. We love you very much. So sad for you and your family, and our thoughts and prayers are with you. You can always find him nowadays on Facebook. You can find Chris Sanders. His Wednesday devotionals and inspirationals are just fantastic. So if you have a message for Chris of support and just thoughts and prayers, find him on Chris Sanders on Facebook. So what do you do when your two sidekicks are out? You bring in the real expert, the man who saw up close and personal every one of the Titans games this season. We haven't been together, and we're not together right now, just via Zoom. For almost a year, we were talking about before the show tonight. Welcome in, Rhett Bryant. How are you, buddy?
I'm good, man. I'm just starting to catch my breath from a very different, wild, and woolly 2020 Titans season. In fact, I'm taking tomorrow off, and then MLK Day is on Monday, and so I'm taking a four-day weekend. I'm ready to recharge the batteries a little bit, but I'm always happy to join you on Michaels and Mueller. And I miss Bob Mueller. I miss seeing his smiling face and the famous mustache. And for tippy toes, number 81, love Chris Sanders, always have, and just can't just thinking a lot about him tonight. And tippy toes, I know you're listening. And if you are, man, we're praying for you. And just so sorry for your loss of your father. And but yeah, we're ready to talk some Titans wrap up topics. And certainly take your phone call soon, right?
That's right. That's phone lines are open. You can call in 615-737-1045, 615-737-1045. We've got the man. If you have any deep technical questions, any stats, anything from any game this year, Rhett Bryant is our guy. So I'm so pumped to be joined by Rhett today on the show. I guess let's start with the end. Overall, what'd you make of the game? Where did it go wrong, and what could we have done better?
Well, first of all, I didn't have a great feeling about that game because
same.
What the Titans defense had been giving up in coming into that game. And quite frankly, they did a pretty doggone good job on Sunday. They didn't, outside of the 48-yard touchdown run by Lamar Jackson, they didn't give up so much. And really, the difference in the ball game and the difference in where things are is the explosive plays. And for everybody listening, that's, offensive plays over 20 yards. Half of the Ravens' 10 longest plays were X plays, as coaches say, and one of those being the 48-yard touchdown run by Lamar Jackson. That was what they could not do, was give up the X plays in this. And just for the rest of it, a lot of credit has to go to the Ravens defense. They were the number 7th ranked defense in the league coming into last week, number 6 against the run, number 8 against the pass, and they proved it. There was no way they were going to let Derrick Henry run all over them like they did a year ago in the divisional round, as he just galloped and led the Titans into an AFC championship run a year ago. And they really created a stone wall and would not let him penetrate it. And they just out-physicaled and outperformed a very high-powered, great-looking Titans offense that had some historical numbers. And that's really kind of what it boiled down to in all of that. People will always question the 4th-and-2 punt with 10 and a half minutes left in the fourth quarter. at their own 40, and you know, thinking about those things and being critical of the coaching decision there. And you know, the stats show that, you know, you have better success if you go for it on fourth. But I, you know, Mike Vrabel said in his closing presser, he thought his defense was playing well enough that they could stay in this thing, and then they just need to put a drive together, and because it was a 4-point game at that point. So that's kind of my takeaways from this thing.
And to defend that decision, I think I saw a stat in the last 4 years, 75 teams or something like that, from the opposition's 50 and into the goal line, fourth and two, trailing by blah, blah, blah. Only one team had punted, and it was the Titans. But to defend that decision, you have Brett Kern. Give him the Kern, right? I mean, he's thinking we're going to pin him deep. Our defense is playing well enough. We're going to get the ball in good field position, and we're going to win this thing. Kurt hit an average punt by his standards, and we still had opportunities coming down the stretch there. But the thing that just kept standing out, two things really, and one of them stood out all season, our inability defensively to get off the field on third down. That is the most glaring of all, because we had some really fine opportunities, third and five, third and seven, that they were able to convert. And then the fact that we weren't able to convert on a couple of third and shorts with Derrick Henry, they really bottled him up. To as you said, to their credit, and much to my bewilderment, they held Derrick Henry in check.
Yeah, they did. And they stacked 8 and 9 in the box, and they were going to make Ryan Tannehill with Corey Davis and Jonnu Smith and A.J. Brown and company, they were going to make them beat them through the air. And that was where the other key going into that game, just like it was when they played them on November 22nd in Baltimore, Marcus Peters and Marlon Humphrey are two of the more bigger physical corner combos in the NFL. So that an A.J. Brown and a Corey Davis had to win those one-on-one battles. And early on, A.J. Brown was taking Marlon Humphrey to the woodshed, but they tightened down coverage, and, you know, the rest is history. And then, apparently, you know, at some point in the game late, Corey Davis hurts a hip, didn't give us an injury designation at that point, and he was on the sideline without a helmet, and that's kind of how his season ended. And, of course, the bigger question mark is that his last game as a Titan, because he's an unrestricted free agent. So that the thing that I take away from this, Ned, is what I always do, and I've been covering this team since 1997 when they were the Tennessee Oilers. You're never prepared for the abrupt stop, the abrupt halt of the season. Because 1 minute, you're in it. It's a 4-point game. You win, and you're going to advance to the divisional round. It's probably going to be a road game, but you know you're alive and you're kicking. And the next thing you know, there's triple zeros, and you're going home. And locker room clean-out days the next day, and the Coach Vrabel's wrap-up presser, and it all of a sudden just abruptly is gone, just like that. And that's, I've never gotten used to that.
Like they say, there's only one team happy at the end of each NFL season.
Yep.
I too, like you, was worried coming into the game because Baltimore had been playing so well. But mainly the maturation process of Lamar Jackson, and it really showed. He throws that awful, just absolutely horrible interception early in the game. We weren't able to convert into a touchdown, and you kind of got the sense at that moment when we kicked the field goal to go up 10-0. Even then, you thought, boy, the touchdown would have gone a long way right there. But he didn't, like last year in the playoffs, he didn't get down. He didn't continue to compound the mistakes with more mistakes. He buckled down. He knew when to throw it. He knew when to run it. It really has evolved over the past 12 months since we saw him last time in the playoffs.
Yeah, and you hit the nail on the head, because you're right. Everyone remembers the divisional round a year ago. The second play he had the ball in his hands on their first possession, he throws a pick to Kevin Byard. Kevin Byard returns it to their 47-yard line. He's so frustrated and angry, he hits him out of bounds illegally. There's a 15-yard pass interference or a 15-yard unsportsmanlike conduct penalty, and the next thing you know, they're right there, and they're getting ready to punch it in, and it's 7-0 before you can blink. And they lived rent-free in that space of his upstairs above the shoulders for the rest of that game. And you're right. That's the place where he could have checked out But you can tell that he remembered what he did a year ago. He is a year older. That team has been together, you know, longer now. And yeah, he's definitely wanting to correct those things, because here's the other thing that happened to the Titans in this. They ran into the team that got hot at the right time. They had a five-game winning streak going into this game. And mind you, that was some bad competition they were playing against. They beat the Cowboys. They beat the Bengals. They, you know, I think they outscored those opponents 144 to 47 or something like that. And all of them had terrible records. They beat Jacksonville was another one. But they still beat NFL teams, and they were able to get rhythm, and they were able to overcome their own COVID outbreak. And that was the big thing that was a difference from the first time the Titans played these guys, November 22nd. And now is they were in the beginning stages of that. They did not have Calais Campbell. They did not have Brandon Williams, two big guys who were able to affect the Titans offense in this thing. And then other guys like Pernell McPhee got involved, and they just kind of fed on each other, and they just outmaneuvered, out-physicaled the Titans.
Like I always say, confidence is a fickle mistress, and that your mind doesn't remember who you beat. It just remembers that you won, and it remembers the success and the momentum, and confidence builds. And very much like the Titans were, as we made our way through the playoffs, you could just, it was tangible, the confidence and the chemistry last year in the Titans locker room. And you had the sense that this year the Ravens were doing the same thing. And I still thought, though, when we got off that hot start, I was a little worried. We thought, okay, 10 to nothing. Wish we had punched it in for that touchdown. But we seemed pretty in control. And then it was just like we got stuck in glue. We could not generate any offense. And I'm okay. Remember, they stacked the box, eight guys, nine guys last year against us. And we ran all over them. This year it became evident that, okay, we're not going to be able to run all over them. But I'm fine with Ryan Tannehill passing the ball. Like you said, Corey Davis, A.J. Brown. A little bit of Janu. You got the sense that Janu needed to have a good game, and he had it was a lackluster performance probably by his standards. Corey Davis, as you said, might have been his last game as a Titan. What do you think?
Well, it depends on what this wide receiver market looks like. And I'll say this to underline what you're saying. You had a Jonnu Smith drop there that should have been caught. Yep. You had a couple of Corey Davis drops. He'd had three the week before in Houston to win the division. So there's some. That's where some things started to, the wheels started to go off track in that. In terms of Corey Davis, it depends on the upcoming wide receiver depth in the draft, which it was a historic year in 2020. I mean, there was wide receivers taken left and right. We know that Alabama's Devontae Smith is number one on that list, and whoever's behind him is who's behind him. And I'd have to look at the free agents. Potential free agents in this thing. I know Juju Smith-Schuster is now a free agent, so he will be someone that will be coveted. And it all comes down to the other thing is we don't know what the salary cap is going to be. It's going to retract a bit because of the losses and loss of revenue in a COVID year. We know pretty certain that they're going to approve through the owners' meetings a 17th regular season game that will offset some of that loss. So I've heard the cap could be as low as $175 million and as much as $195. So you're going to have some fall off there. So it depends on who is able to go shopping at that point. And there's going to be a handful of teams, there always is, that rolls money over. And if someone deems him worthy of being a number one receiver, they'll pay him that money and he'll go somewhere else, because I don't know that the Titans would ante up and pay that. But we just have to wait and see.
Sometimes as a professional athlete, if you're injured, it's hard to do what you normally do. And I'm not making any excuses, but we just don't know if his hip maybe had been bothering him the game before, or maybe the second part of the season even. But you could see his confidence eroding, especially, as you mentioned, in the second to last game there. When he caught one, you were relieved. And the ones he was dropping weren't difficult catches. We were used to seeing Corey Davis make those. And I just wonder if maybe his hip was bothering him, wouldn't tell anybody. And finally, it just got to the point where it wasn't bearable anymore. But it'd be pretty easy just by looking at statistics and looking at those last two games that say that he's got a confidence problem. And a number one receiver with a confidence problem, that doesn't sound like a good mix.
Well, but if you're a team that's interested and you bring him in for a physical, if you're able to do that, then we'll see how things go. you'll also take into consideration what a tough year that young man had. He lost his brother Titus.
Yes.
Just a couple of 3 months ago, and Titus was only 27 years old, his older brother. And so he went through a lot with that. Roger Saffold on this team lost his father and his sister during this football season. David Long Jr. lost his brother almost the same week that Corey Davis lost his brother. There's a lot of stuff behind the scenes people don't realize that they really saw some hardship like a lot of folks go through every day and have been in this pandemic.
Good clarification. I mean, we have to remember that they're human. They're people. They're gladiators, and that's the way we see them in Invincible. But you know, under the helmet and behind the shades, they're still human. Hey, a lot to talk about. Let's look back on the season because there are plenty of positives. And then a look ahead because we've got to figure out what we need to fix and how we're going to do it for next season. I've also gotten a few texts here. People want to talk about UT football. That'll be a very short conversation. Vanderbilt has a new coach. We might get into that. Who knows? Stick with us. Michaels and Mueller, all of that coming back. And phone lines are open, 615-737-1045. So hit us with your questions. Stick around, 104.5 The Zone.
Hers and His Plumbing is a rep.
Well, Brian joined us tonight on Michaels and Mueller. He's dropping some knowledge on me, something that I hadn't heard. Just down the road from Vanderbilt, a big one of their stars, a man who graduated a couple years ago, has been signed to the Titans on a futures contract. We'll fill you in on that information. It is Michaels and Mueller. Ned Michaels, Rhett Bryant. Mueller is out on assignment. And if you're just joining us, Chris Sanders, his father passed away. So he obviously is not with us. Our thoughts and prayers go out to Chris and his family in these very difficult times. And you can find Chris, he's on Facebook every Wednesday. Now he does these motivational talks. And talks about his faith and his journey in life. They're fantastic. They're inspiring. This man is just filled with positivity, and we're both honored, I know, Rhett, to call him a friend. So find him on Facebook, Chris Sanders, and just leave him a note. Let him know that you're thinking about him. This segment brought to you by Visit Mississippi. If you're a little bit skittish about flying right now, you can just drive to Mississippi. A lot of beautiful state parks, of course, fantastic food. And what better way to social distance than on the golf course or at the beach? Mississippi has all of that. You can find everything you want to know. Visit Mississippi.org. So, Rhett, we were talking an interesting signing that I'm excited about. Mr. Pinckney from the Vanderbilt Commodore signed to the Titans yesterday, you were telling me.
Yeah, Jared Pinckney agreed to be a futures contract agreement with the Titans yesterday. And had spent all of the 2020 season on the Atlanta Falcons practice squad. So he's gotten, you know, a lot of work under his belt in that regard. And, you know, a player I really like in his career, especially playing as well as he did against Southeastern Conference talent. I like that move. And it's not really a surprise when you start looking at the potential free agent departures that the Titans could have on tap. Every one of their tight ends is going to be a restricted runner, unrestricted free agent when the new fiscal year begins sometime in March. And so it doesn't surprise me that they would do this to work on the younger end of the roster like that, for sure.
I love this guy. Obviously, I'm a Vandy fan, so I'm biased. But watching him play, as you mentioned, SEC, he and Kalijah Lipscomb, they were the two targets. And he still was fantastic. Great hands. I don't know enough about his blocking skills to comment, but he's not afraid to go down the middle. He's got enough speed to be able to get behind some of the linebackers, and his hands are like glue. So I think it's just a matter of giving some time, giving the opportunity. I wouldn't be surprised to see him on our roster next year. I like that pickup, especially at that value. That's fantastic. But you do raise a good point. I mean, looking ahead, what are we going to do? Because we've got some defensive issues that we have to remedy. To our credit, we tried. Vic Beasley didn't work. Clowney, unfortunately, was injured. But talking about our tight ends, talking about our defense, where does the priority lie?
It has to be defense because, you know, everyone knows the Titans' defensive woes on third down. Nearly 52% rate they gave up on third down. I think that's the worst in 30 seasons in the NFL.
That's so bad.
Something
so bad.
Which, well, and it's bad enough that it is amazing. And it shows you the prowess that Arthur Smith and this offense with Tannehill, Henry, and company did to keep this thing going. Because how in the world do you win 11 games and win a division, you know, with that, giving that up? And it's, statistically, it's just an anomaly. You just don't normally see those things. So it's got to be defensive mind in this thing. And, you know, we were talking in break, and I want to bring up the point that, you know, you really missed a Jayon Brown after he dislocated his elbow and was put on IR, because that's the guy in pass coverage that you needed to drop back there and had the closing speed. And that's no knock on Rashawn Evans or David Long. They're just not that guy. And that's where you miss him. You miss speed in the secondary all season long. You know, Adoree Jackson didn't play until the last three games plus a playoff game, and certainly looked rusty in that, and for good reason. I mean, because of the way things kind of have gone with restrictions due to COVID. And, you know, Christian Fulton, that you drafted in the second round from LSU, had his moments up and down the IR. And so you never got them on the field at the same time, really, for any quality snaps. Word has come out this afternoon. Jerry Dulac, the longtime writer for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, he covers the PGA and the Steelers for that publication. He is reporting that a possible coaching departure for the Steelers is their senior defensive assistant and secondary coach, Terrell Austin. Now, Terrell Austin has been a veteran coach in the league for a long time. And for Titans fans that might be listening tonight, that name is familiar, because when they were trying to decide whether they were going to take off the interim label and make Mike Mularkey the full-time head coach, they had to do their due diligence and they had to interview other candidates. And he did interview for the Titans head coaching job back in 2016. But he is, he's been around a long time. And so apparently per these reports, and Jerry Dulac would be a very reliable source because he's been with the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette for a long time, that he interviewed to become the Titans defensive coordinator. And that's something I know Titans fans would be relieved at because of the playfulness that Coach Vrabel has had all season with not naming someone, you know. And we suspect all along that, you know, that Shane Bowen, the outside linebackers coach, was the de facto defensive coordinator. It wasn't, in fact, called by Mike Vrabel. That's his prerogative to do it, play it however he wants. But that's something that's, you know, got to be addressed in this. And then the biggest thing defensively, Ned, is you need, and I mean plural, pass rushers. You need a stud pass rusher in the draft. You need probably one in free agency. I mean, you need two or three to go with Harold Landry in this thing, because as you mentioned, you know, they, John Robinson did his best and brought in Jadeveon Clowney. That didn't work out, and Vic Beasley did not work out either. He gave it a run. He tried it, but they have to go back to that well. They have to have some kind of pressure up front so that the lack of speed in the secondary, if you run into that again, won't be so telling in this. You know, look at what Green Bay did a couple of years ago. You know, they did not have the pass rush that they needed. And so they went out and got Preston Smith and Za'Darius Smith from the Ravens, and they're sitting right in the catbird seat in the NFC. And you saw what they did to the Titans, you know, that Christmas weekend on the 27th and Sunday Night Football. They got after the Titans and got after Ryan Tannehill in that. So it's got to be defense, and then you work your way from there.
You can find him on Twitter at Rhett B. Tennessee. He is smearing knowledge all over Michaels and Mueller tonight. You know, it's so funny. This is such a, I guess all professional sports are like this, but especially NFL. So what have you done for me lately, league? And you look at Mr. Robinson, we all were applauding his moves. Vic Beasley, questionable, but okay. I like the effort. Clowney, absolutely. We were high-fiving each other saying, this is fantastic. This is the missing link. We're going to get, even though he wasn't a sack machine out in Seattle, he was a disruptor, as you called him. Right. And it just didn't work. He got hurt and he was ineffective when he was in. And so now you're kind of questioning Mr. Robinson and saying, well, maybe those weren't the right moves. Maybe he doesn't have the Midas touch like we thought.
Well, and it's compounded by the lack of production from the rookie class, which
yes,
some teams have had better hits and misses on that this year than others, because let's keep in mind, there were no OTAs. There was no rookie mini camp. It was virtual learning for the longest time, and then they threw them into the fire in training camp and sorted them out from there. And of course, you know, we're talking about Isaiah Wilson, the 29th overall pick, the tackle from Georgia.
Where does he go from here?
You know, I don't know if they cut bait on him yet or not, because he is a first round pick, but
right.
I'd say he's certainly in trouble. And the thing is, I think that's the thing that most puzzles John Robinson is probably the evaluation process of that and what slipped through the cracks. Because it's clear, I don't think he had any indication that this young man has a lot of issues, like a lot of young men that come out. They don't necessarily have a strong force leadership in their lives. And they have hangers-on or entourages or whatever. And, you know, it's a cautionary tale, and we've seen it too many times. But I've heard some of the whispers and stories about decisions that he's made that have been poor. Some of them have been on the police blotter, of course.
Yep.
And, you know, you just hope that a young man like that pulls it together and figures it out, because he's a young man who is a giant of a young man. And, you know, he could have played another 2 years at Georgia. So there's some maturity issues there, I would think, to begin with. But he's got physical skills, and he has the size you can't manufacture. So, you know, I see the attraction there. But I think that's where it's a compounded thing for John Robinson, between going after pass rushers and missing so far on this first round pick in Isaiah Wilson.
Yeah, that hasn't been close. But again, you mentioned he's so young. You hope that maybe they can coach him up and mold him, although he hasn't shown any signs of really wanting to be molded yet. But again, you don't give up on him, I don't think, this quickly as a person. Maybe as a player, you know, you have to put him on the shelf again. But John Robinson strikes me as, and the organization strikes me as, a kind of place right now culturally where they're going to stick by him as long as they can. Personally, they want to see his life get on track. And then obviously professionally on the field, they would love to see him get on track, because what a difference maker he could make up front. When we come back, I want to delve a little bit into the bad and the good, because the season had a little bit of everything, but I want to end on good notes. So just be getting that ready, Brett, in your mind, for we're going to end the last segment on, okay, looking forward, looking back, however you want to play it. Here are the positives, because there are plenty of them. It's easy right now to look at the negatives and what could have been, and we should have done this, but okay, that's fine. Let's put that to bed. In the last segment, we will talk about all the positives. Michael Zamula, that's all ahead here on 104.5 The Zone.
Have big plans.
Making the turn here, as we would say on Global Golf Radio, which, by the way, is next. Stick around. Barney Allery and I are going to break down what's happening in the world of golf. Michael Zamula brought to you by Visit Mississippi. You can check it out, visitmississippi.org. Chris Sanders and I were talking last week about this wonderful initiative that they have in Mississippi that we're going to do as soon as COVID clears. It's a civil rights itinerary. It's a three-night, four-day itinerary where you go through and you visit the pivotal spots in the civil rights movement in the state of Tennessee. I imagine it'll be a poignant, emotional experience, and Chris and I are looking forward to doing that together. If you're just joining us, Chris's father passed away, and he's not with us. So, again, please go to Chris's Facebook page and just offer your condolences and thoughts and prayers to their family as they go through these very difficult times. 615-737-1045. That's the phone number. I'm Ned Michaels. He's Rhett Bryant. He's joining us, and he is just absolutely killing it with knowledge. If you have any questions, feel free to pop in. We, even though we're not together, we're Zooming. Our man Ryan Albanese is holding down the fort in studio, and he'll get us your questions, and we'll be able to get you on air. Let's talk real quickly about your season, because I do find it fascinating how you all logistically were able to broadcast all of the games, including the away games.
Yeah, it's well, the biggest amazing part about it is that none of us got COVID and gave it to one another and had our own problems with an outbreak. We were very careful, very cautious. And Mike Keith messaged us this morning in our group and said he had done research of all the other 31 NFL radio teams, and Titans Radio and the New Orleans Saints broadcast were the only two teams out of the 32 that traveled to every single road game and did all games together, which is just unreal. Now, it wasn't easy, just like anything else that anyone else is dealing with in this. And I don't want to make light of those things, because we have frontline workers, nurses, and doctors who have been in what I would call a medical hell for 9 months. And so I don't want to make this sound like it was awful. It was difficult. So what I would do is, and a lot of times I do this a couple of weeks out, knowing we had a road game, and I would reach out to either the stadium authority or the visiting PR person, media relations person, that was my point of contact. And I basically came up with a questionnaire to see if we could travel. And it would be as simple as, do you have travel restrictions in your city or state? Do you have the availability so that we can set up before the game? How many people can be in the booth at one time? Where is the radio booth? Because some of them have been moved because they would make coaches' booths bigger to spread them out, to keep from, you know, getting, you know, cross-pollinated in this thing and spreading it back to one another. All these things. And so I would come up with about 8 to 10 questions. And so when I would get the green light on all of those, I would call Mike, Keith, and I would say, okay, we're good to go to Baltimore. And he'd go, perfect. I'm going to call the travel agency, or I'm going to, you know, book everything. And he booked all of our trips. And we flew commercial. Sometimes there were layovers and changing planes. But he booked, you know, had a rental car, had hotels, the whole thing. He was amazing in this. But and we had our own challenges where, you know, we had personnel swap here and there and had to move, switch positions and things. But we did it. We called 17 games in a pandemic. And it's something I'm very proud of, because we wanted to be able to go on the road and tell the listeners how strange it was that there were no fans in the stands, or 750 fans that night on Sunday Night Football at Lambeau Field, or whatever. And it was the most challenging season I think we've ever had because of the logistics of it. The things, that little tiny minute details that you take for granted, everything was a challenge.
Well, like a duck on a water, we couldn't tell. You guys may have been churning underneath, but you look cool as cucumbers on top. As I always say, I think you're the best in the business. That team is fantastic. And of course, Mike Keith does such a good job calling the games and represents the entire network and radio station and Titans Radio beautifully. But yeah, it's hard to describe just how difficult it is. And I think probably just like the players, the unknown is the real challenge of it, especially when you're trying to get all those logistics put in place.
Yeah. It's just, you know, the good thing is Powell Ledbetter, who owns VIP Moving and Storage, he's the official mover of the Titans. He moves all their equipment wherever they go. He takes care of when they hire new coaches and they need their homes moved or things like that. He's a fantastic guy, fantastic operation. And he takes care of all of our gear and allows us to put it on his tractor trailer. And unless they're going, you know, super far west of the Mississippi, they drive. And so Denver was the only trip this year where it was put on an airplane and brought out that way. Everything else, you know, he'll go as far west as Kansas City and Houston. So he would truck it, and we would be in touch with him and go, yep, the equipment's here. And I would have the media relations teams for these visiting teams were fantastic. They were, a lot of times, had somebody meet us and take us to where the newly located visiting radio booth was. And then, of course, there's connection issues with the company that we have sports backhaul to get us to make sure we have all the connection ports live and ready so that we can go on the air. I mean, just all kinds of things like that. And of course, we're always looking at the weather, and we went through contingency plans left and right. I mean, we had to, you know, there were some challenges with how we connected to a broadcast. For example, that horrible bombing on Christmas Day, well, that hit an AT&T center with all those switches. Well,
right.
That was one of the main ways we connected to a broadcast. So we had to figure out a different way to connect to Westwood One in Denver, Colorado, and get it out to all the affiliations so that we could have a Sunday night football game in Green Bay at Lambeau Field. And again, you're right. No one would ever know that. But it was trying. I think I got some extra gray hairs in these last 130 days or so.
I'm surprised you have any hair left.
That's true. That's very true.
Well, we said we're going to save the last segment for positivity, but yep. The moving company, perfect segue for just a brief couple of minutes here. Who's going to be moving on from the Titans, do you think?
Well, Arthur Smith, to begin with, the offensive coordinator.
Right.
He's the only candidate that is going to interview for all head coaching openings. It looks like Urban Meyer is going to be the head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars, and that, you know, Arthur Smith could have any one of the remaining five. You hear that it may be Atlanta. I think he can go any place he wants. He's a smart guy, knows what he's doing. He put together an offensive plan. I mean, think about this. You know, 2 years ago, you lost Matt LaFleur after Mike Vrabel's rookie season as a head coach, and he has done very well with Aaron Rodgers and the Packers up north. And you didn't miss a beat. I mean, Arthur Smith has been ready for this his whole life. And, yeah, there were moments where, you know, that things didn't go right or whatever, but he averaged 30-something points a game. I mean, they were putting numbers up reminiscent of Warren Moon, Webster Slaughter, Ernest Givens in the run and shoot when you're talking about this franchise as the Houston Oilers back, you know, all those years ago in the Houston Astrodome, and have a 2,000-yard runner, 1,000-yard receiver in A.J. Brown, and Corey Davis was less than 50 yards away from being two 1,000-yard receivers. You know, Ryan Tannehill passes for 3,819 yards and only a handful of interceptions, so over 30 touchdowns. He had the best year as a Titans quarterback since Steve McNair was the co-MVP in 2003, and he shattered that. I mean, so Arthur
Smith
got
stiffed in the Pro Bowl selection.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. But Arthur Smith is going to be the big one. You know, I could run down the list of potential free agents. We'll have to see how all that plays out. I don't know who's going and who's staying in that department more than likely at this point, because we don't know how much the cap is going to be. But the biggest change is going to be you're going to have to find another offensive coordinator.
Well, selfishly, I hope he doesn't get any of the jobs. He will, but selfishly, I hope he doesn't, because I'd like to see one more season and our defense get shored up and we might have a little something.
I would too, especially while Brett Kern is still able to do at his age what he's doing in that phase of things to complete the three phases. I'm excited about young rookie Darrington Evans from Appy State as he started to come on in that return game and as a change of pace back who can catch it out of the backfield. That guy's got a bright young future with this Titans offense. So I'm looking forward to that too.
Hold all that positivity. Just hold it in for a couple of minutes. We're going to slide out, pay a few bills, and we're going to end with only the good stuff as we look ahead for the Titans.
You've seen Rich Eisen.
More minutes left on Michaels and Mueller. We're going to save this segment for only the positive stuff. One of the most positive things happening around Nashville is the Grove, groveliving.com. If you like golf, they have a signature Greg Norman course, the only one in Tennessee. Beautiful homes, a private setting. It's the premier private golf club community in the Nashville area. It harkens back to a different era. Things just slow down when you go out there. The golf course is fantastic. The practice area is as good as you will ever find. The food, they have multiple restaurants, multiple pools. They have this awesome slide that I like to take my kids down, and I might even get on it as well. And of course, if you don't want to be around the kids, they've got a couple of adult only pools. It really is just a separate premier community. And if you're looking for a new home, you're looking for a new club, that's your place. Grove, thegroveliving.com. Joined by Rhett Bryant here as we end the show. I said we're going to save all the positivity for right now. So we're just going to completely unload on you as we look ahead, because Rhett, the star's still shining for the Titans as we look ahead to next season. What particularly jumps out to you?
Well, you start with the offense, the strength of this team. All of your offensive line is going to come back. Lawan's going to come back from the ACL. Roger Saffold will come back. Ben Jones. Nate Davis, who has developed into an all-pro caliber right guard, will be right there. Dennis Kelly will be the right tackle. And like we mentioned before, you know, maybe there's a chance Isaiah Wilson can find his way into that. You still have Derrick Henry for three more years if you want him. You still have Ryan Tannehill for three more years if you want him. A.J. Brown is in the middle of a rookie contract. So you've got those things right there. That is some lot of solid core pieces on this offense. And I mentioned young Darrington Evans from Appy State to be the young change of pace, you know, catch it out of the backfield back to go with Henry. So that's on offense. On defense, Jeffrey Simmons is still under rookie contract. It is a grown man growing before our very eyes who is going to be a big-time star in this game. He's got to have some help with those pass rushers we were talking about earlier in the hour. And he's going to have to figure out – they're going to figure out some things on that line too, because, you know, Daquan Jones is going to be a free agent in this. But you've still got him for a while. So, you know, and Laurel Murchison is a kid they picked up in the middle rounds from NC State that I like on the D-line. And Christian Fulton, the cornerback that they took in the second round from LSU. What I'm hoping with this rookie class from 2020 is that they will grow – hopefully these vaccines become waves and waves of people getting them, and we can get out of this thing. And one of the small benefits and dividends for what we're talking about, the Titans, is that those guys can go and learn hands-on in all those off-season phases with the current crop of rookies they'll have, and be able to pay even bigger dividends in their second year with the Titans. There's a lot of things that are very positive about this. And if they get a defensive coordinator that shapes things up on the other end of things, they get those pass rushers, then here we go. Because you've got some really good stuff in place.
I think there are a couple of big picture items too. Mike Vrabel is only getting better. The culture of the entire organization from the owner down feels very solid to me. It doesn't feel flighty and flaky like it had over the past decade.
Sure.
And I think the fans are going to be so ravenous to get back in there. We've missed being able to go to the games. We're not going to take it for granted like we have for the past really 10 years. We're not going to let the Steelers fans come in and outnumber us. And I think that's going to make a big difference, because we have a fantastic football team that can go places.
Well, and let me say something else, and I'm glad you brought this up. Susie Smith, Amy Adams-Strunk's sister, has agreed to sell her portion of the ownership to Kenneth the Fourth, the grandson, and his brother Barkley. And so there's a more unified, streamlined ownership that would please the league. So that's solid. You're right. And then there's been these recent talks with the city of Nashville and the mayor's office and those things about the future of Nissan Stadium. She doesn't want a new stadium. She wants to put some stuff in there like what you see at Hard Rock the other night with some of those improvements in this thing. So the future is starting to look past the end of that lease with the city in 2028. So there's some big things on the horizon with this team in terms of stability in the product on the field and off of it.
All exciting stuff. Rhett, thank you so much, man, for filling in. I always enjoy talking to you. You have so much knowledge. Go enjoy your family. You get a little R&R now after certainly what was a very, very difficult season.
I'm going to. I really enjoyed filling in for those guys with you, but I miss Bob Mueller, and I hate that it was under the circumstances for Chris Sanders, but I won't be a stranger. I'd like to be back on Michaels and Mueller with you guys anytime you'd like.
Well, we'll take you anytime you have, and hopefully to be in studio together. Take care,
yes.
My friend.
All right, brother.
That's it for Michaels and Mueller. Global Golf Radio, that's next on 104.5 The Zone.
You've heard Tom Shane on the